Welcome to The Woodshed with Cody Wood on the Equus Radio Network, where some amazing guests stop in, share their stories, and have a few laughs along the way. From the rodeo road to everyday life, it's all part of the ride. Here's your host, Cody Wood.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome once again here to beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Day five, round five. And we have got another great guest in store. I'm pumped for this interview right now and the opportunity to kind of get into some of one of the great sports, if you will, of all of Western sports. But before then, this episode brought to you by Buildings by Design. Buildings by Design, a great project management, general contractor, construction management, anything and everything that you could be looking for in your next project. Buildings by Design, based out of Brush, Colorado, but they will go anywhere in the United States to help you with your next building project. And when you're talking about a building project, you get awfully stressful, real stressful. And you're gonna wanna have the highest level of communication, highest level of customer care. And that's exactly what you get with Pat Walter and the team over at Buildings by Design. Pat Walter, also the brother of one of the greatest bull riders to ever come out of the state of Colorado. So big shout out to Buildings by Design and Pat Walter for bringing us our interview here today. But with all that said, folks, we are gonna get right into it. And speaking of bull riding, I've got one of the greatest bull riders that has ever walked this planet right here with us here today, right here from Longmont, Colorado. A 2005 PBR Rookie of the Year, 10 consecutive PBR Finals appearances, and a 2009 PBR World Championship to go along with that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Cody Lostro.
Wow, I'm impressed with your memory there. Sometimes I struggle to remember that.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I mean. We got to take you back and relive some of that history. But it is. It was a great, you know, honestly, I had a front row seat to watch your career, and especially the early years or whatnot, you know. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that was just awesome to watch you as with young in high school, you know, and seeing, you know, knowing that your career was going to be so successful and what it's been and what it still is today, you know. So it's pretty cool to see where you've come from all that, you know. And so, like I said, you know, Longmont, you know, great place to live, to grow. You know, we've had a lot of good bull riders in our day come from the Mountain West and Colorado and Wyoming or whatnot. But I mean, I think you're at the pinnacle of that. I mean, there's a big case to make that maybe even anywhere West Mountains states, Pacific time zones. But you got started, you know, young age, right? Started riding calves, steers, and all the way up. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I started riding steers when I was seven.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a funny story. So my mom actually lied about my age to get me in the steer riding, because the eight was supposed to be the youngest you could be, right? It's ironic. My mom hated me riding bulls, and she's the one who lied about my age to get me in my first steer riding, and the one who unknowingly trained me to ride bulls through other avenues like jumping horse,
man,
you know, English horse riding. So
yeah, boy, that makes a lot of sense. I guess I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a crazy story, actually. You know, like I said, I started riding when I was seven. And the backstory to that even was I had a tape of Cheyenne Frontier Days,
mm-hmm.
and it was actually, the year that Lane got killed, and I'd watch it over and over and over. And then I'd go ride the dog, you know, when I was done. I just thought the bull riding was so cool.
Yeah.
And eventually my mom's like, you know, you want to ride a steer at our county fair? So I signed up Boulder County Fair, and I didn't have no equipment, no idea what I was doing, just showed up. I'm here to ride, and they found me equipment, and I got on and rode a while and fell off and just thought it was the funnest thing ever. But yeah, getting into that, so my mom, she rode hunter jumpers, and you know, my stepdad's side of the family, they imported all these great horses and bred horses for that purpose. And so I grew up around that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And my mom just decided, you know, I'm going to teach my son how to ride my style of riding. And fell into that, and couldn't have been actually a better foundation for bull riding.
No, for sure. Especially, like I said, I mean, the reason why I kind of, when I look back at it, and why, one, it's not surprising at all, because when you look at the way that you rode, you know, and your form and your style, I mean, nobody hit their post better. You know what I mean? I mean, when that bull's gathering the front end, I mean, very few people ever probably could get out of the front end better than you did, you know? And so,
Maybe that's debatable.
Yeah, but you know, everybody's got a different style, right?
Yeah.
Everybody rides differently, but yours, clearly that was a strength of yours, and so that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. But you know, so for any of you viewers out there, you know, in the the hunter jumper world or whatnot. You know, you never know. Maybe all that hunter jumper experience can turn you into the next world champion bull rider, you know. So if you want to try out this sport after all your hunter jumper experience, you know, we know a guy. But
get a hold of me, please. We need more bull riders. We need you.
Yes, exactly. I know it because but it's true. You know, we said we got Equus Television. There's a ton of hunter jumpers on here that are hopefully watching us now. But so, you know, that's really cool how that came about. And then so when did you make your way over to, you know, to the Rich house and, you know, a lot of that real consecutive big bull riding, if you know.
Yeah. So all of my stuff started pretty young, you know, and obviously you got to watch some of that. Yeah. But I started riding steers when I was 7, bulls when I was 11, and started entering open bull rides when I was 14.
Okay.
And I look back at that now, and it was kind of crazy to think, because I don't see many 14-year-old guys now that I think are ready for that, you know?
Yeah.
And I probably wasn't either. Who knows? But well,
I mean, because, you know, I mean, it was so awesome to watch, you know, because it was you and, you know, and Josh, you know, Josh Cushell, another amazing bull rider. But it wasn't like you were getting into opens that you would see today where they're just out and around. I mean, you were getting on Chili Pepper and Muskrat and, I mean, some really honky, strong, you know, bulls that would bring you down type of bucking bull, you know, at that age. And so that's when, you know, it was early on that you could tell that obviously that you were destined for big things. And I'm so curious to see if you remember this, but one of the moments too, when I was like, man, this dude is well on his way. We were in Paonia, Colorado.
Okay.
And it was like, I don't think it was on the 4th, maybe it was around the 4th. But anyway, it was a bull riding in Paonia. And what you might remember it is that there was a forest fire all of a sudden coming up over the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, I just, you know, I think you won that bull riding and if you didn't, it was a great bull ride and just dominating, you know, bull ride as a young high school, you know, probably 16, 15 or something.
Yeah. 16 at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll never forget like thinking, sitting there behind the bucking chutes and looking out at the crowd being like, none of these people are very nervous about that fire coming down barreling on the backside of them, you know, and luckily it stopped with that sagebrush and all that was pretty dry. I just never forget that fire coming up over that mountain like that. But
I'm glad you mentioned that though, because I honestly hadn't thought about it since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that. We were like, all right, I guess we're just having this bull ride and we might catch on fire. Yeah, maybe we'll be all right. But
yeah, we'll just keep going, I guess.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's always kind of stood out to me. But that was just, you know, those moments, you know, when yourself and like I said, and Josh, you know, were just really doing well. And so when you get into the PBR, I mean, your success happened awfully fast, you know, obviously being the 2005 PBR Rookie of the Year and kind of, you know, from word go, you were challenging that top spot.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you put it like that, it seems like it came pretty easy, right?
And, yeah, and easier I did, said than done.
I did have success pretty quick in from a young age. But I think it's always important, and I remind guys all the time, I wasn't naturally gifted at this, right? Like the first 2 years I started riding, I didn't ride anything, not a thing, period. Fell off all of them for 2 years.
Yeah.
And was stubborn and refused to quit and kept going and finally got the hang of it. And even then in high school, you know, Josh always kicked my butt for a long time and I finally got a little better and could beat him. And then even into the PBR, you know, I did win Rookie of the Year that first year, but filling my permit was a challenge, a huge challenge for me. You know, I'd always ride them long round bulls. And this is back, to take you back when all the good guys entered the Challenger events too, those lower level events.
Yeah.
And they would, the PBR would reserve 5 spots for permit guys to get in. And if you didn't draw one of those 5 spots, you weren't getting on a permit.
Yeah, dang, yeah.
And they were tough. So, you know, you entered everything you could on your permit and very rarely you'd get in. So when you get in, you need to make it count.
Yeah.
And I remember riding long round bull after long round bull and bucking off in the short round and never winning anything. And you probably remember Matt Weber.
Oh, yeah.
Is a good buddy of mine I was traveling with at the time. And I asked him, frustrated one day, I'd bucked off another short round bull. And I was like, Matt, what the heck am I doing here? What is wrong with me? And I remember, I mean, and this is advice that changed my career. And I'd have no doubt it changed other guys' careers as well, that their trajectory. Is he said, you got to believe that you deserve to be here. Because right now, you're trying to basically convince yourself of that fact. But when you believe it, you'll be successful. I was like, thought about it for a while, you know, a couple hours after that event. I was like, son of a gun, you know, he's right. And in all honesty, I do believe I deserve to be here. So stop being surprised when the success comes.
Yeah.
And I think the next event we went to, rode my first short round bull, was 90 points for the first time, filled my permit. It was just like, you know, that was kind of the turning point. And then obviously get up to the Built Ford Tough level. At the time it was Built Ford Tough, not Unleash the Beast. And I think I won my first round at my first event, made the short round at that event. But still, there's another learning curve when you get to that level. And so that took a while. But I think the moral of the story is, if you're stubborn and willing to work, you can have as much success as you want early, but it's going to come with some struggles, no matter who you are or how good you are.
Yeah. No matter what event or aspect in life too, you know, so big shout out to Matt Weber, but that's great information just in general, no matter what you're doing, you know, and having that belief and, you know, you're in control of just a couple of things, and one of them being your attitude.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, and that was one of the things too, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it was just always so fun and proud, honestly, you know, you represented our state, you know, so well, you know, in a state that had a lot of great bull riders, but a lot of them never even, you know, find different paths, whatever, you know, and it was just so cool to watch that come through. And so then you can just see the momentum rolling right after you win your rookie of the year, and you roll into 6 and 7, and again, you're challenging that top spot or whatnot. And one of the conversations that I've always wanted to have with you that I think gets lost and sometimes, you know, is the PBR, and rightfully so, bull riding in general has evolved so much, and the finals has changed a couple different times, you know, and just the format itself. But I think a lot of people forget that it used to be 8 head.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you're talking about, obviously here at the NFR, it's obviously a gauntlet to get through 10 rounds of the NFR and stuff, but you're talking about 8 rounds of PBR bucking bulls and what that is like, and that just that environment. I mean, probably, you know, and I'm biased maybe a little bit, but I'm pretty certain that, you know, when you're talking about a finals in a race, it might not have ever been better than 2009.
You know? I'd agree.
You know, because I mean, out of all the times too, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, throughout that whole process, you know, JB'd ride one, you'd ride one, JB rode one, you'd ride one. And at the end of the day, I believe you finished 7 of 8, right?
Yeah. That was a 10th of a second away from
all
eight out of eight. Yeah.
Yeah. But JB didn't rode all 8.
Yeah.
You know, and so talk about a battle and you two battling it out and coming out on top, and some of the bulls that you had to get on throughout that process. I mean, what was that finals like, and ultimately achieving the goal you've sought after?
Yeah, that finals, I'd agree with you. I think it was one of the best. And, you know, as time goes on, people forget and stuff. There's been a lot of really good finals and races and everything. But that year in 09, you know, I got the lead right off the bat. And then I kind of got in a funk there and rode like crap and lost it. Got things turned around, took the lead back and never give it up. But going into the finals, it was basically a three-way battle between me, JB Mooney, and Guilherme Marchi. And so we all knew, we all expected it to be tough, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't, when you're riding against guys like that, you don't expect them to fail. Like, you're not going to go in there and get lucky and win because you got lucky. Like, you're going to earn it. And so I think that's what I know that's what I expected, and I think that's what those other guys did too.
Yeah.
But the funnest part about it was, you know, like you mentioned, Guilherme kind of fell out of the conversation after he bucked off a couple, and me and JB had started off on fire. But when you talk about a back and forth battle, it wasn't just a bull ride back and forth. It was a big bull ride.
Yeah.
Like the first round, and I'll try to roughly remember the scores, but I remember I drew a bull. I didn't think he deserved to be there. I thought he was counterfeit. I thought if he started getting the best of him, he was going to split.
Uh-huh.
Sure enough, I drew that son of a gun, and he had thrown me off earlier in the year. And I told Cody Lambert, who picked the bulls at that time, I said, "That bull don't deserve to be here." He said, "Well, he bucked you off, didn't he?" I said, "Well, I guess you're right, he did." But I said, anyhow, long story short, I get on him. He makes a couple rounds, and he does split, and not quite bad enough for a reride. But I was 84 points. I think JB may have been like 89 that first night. So I was at a deficit, big deficit right off the bat. Like I said, I'm trying to remember scores. It's been a long time. But basically, we were going back and forth each night. I'd win a round, he'd win a round. I'd win a round, he would win a round. in, you know, high 80s, low 90s type scores every night.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like getting by. It was domination by the top two guys in the world each night. And then I actually eventually ended up that last day catching JB in the average and passing him. And going into the short round, those top two bulls were Black Pearl, which is, you know, very great bull, very rideable bull. And then you've got Voodoo Child, which is also a great bull, much less rideable, right?
Yeah, I don't think he would never.
Yeah, I think he'd been rode one time at that time, you know, Justin had ridden him for 94 or something like that. Yeah. And I remember he'd bucked me off several times that year too, and that's what I ended up having in the short round. JB had Black Pearl. And so this is our whole careers, right? Neither of us have won a world title. Uh-huh. This is everything we've ever wanted to do, is be in this moment at this time.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you would think there'd be a lot of pressure in it, right? That you're just overwhelmed with the anxiety of what you got to do and what's on the line and all that. And I can't speak for JB, but I know for myself at the time, I'd gotten myself so brainwashed into the place I wanted myself to be in, that all of that stuff was just noise I could block out. And it was literally every round was me and a bull and a buck and shoot. And that was the only thing in the entire world that mattered. So getting on for $1 million in the short round, the world finals on, you know, probably arguably the toughest bull in the short round. Yeah. There's no pressure. And I think what I learned from that moment is we as people are the only ones that can put pressure on ourselves, right? Like, it doesn't matter what I say to you or anybody else does. That doesn't actually put any pressure on you unless you accept it, right?
It's true.
And I came to that realization in that moment, like, I can control the pressure. If I like the pressure, I can amp it up a little bit. If I don't like it, I can push it out a little bit. So, as it worked out, though, Voodoo Child jerked the rope out of my hand at 7.5 seconds. I held on as long as I could, and I hit the dirt at 7, 8, or 9, and, you know, I didn't ride all 8. JB made a great, great ride on Black Pearl. It was 93 and won the finals. And ended up being the tightest world at that time with the points system they had, the tightest world title race that they'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, personally, I'm biased too, because I was in the middle of it. Even from an outsider's perspective, like, I was kind of able to, like, remove myself from the situation and just look at it for what it was. Like, this is the coolest thing to have, like, your number one and number two guy just standing toe-to-toe and and whooping on each other every round.
It was a heavyweight title fight, and that's why, like I said, I don't think that there ever has been, you know, you get into some of these PRCA races, there's a couple of close ones, like in 93 with Ty Murray and Daryl Mills, you know, won it by $93 or whatever, you know, I mean, that's another one that comes to my mind, but no, and again, it can't be understated too, and again, I don't want to diminish the 10 rounds of the NFR either, you know, but 8 rounds of a PBR is a lot, you know, and especially when you look at it in comparison to, you know, in the PRCA, you know, it's only happened 3 times, you know, I mean, in 88, 90, and 94, you know, that's a long time ago, you know, since somebody's rode all 10 at the NFR. So I thought in my mind at that time, you know, the fact that JB rode all 8, that you were 7 for 8, almost 8 for 8, you know, was just a massive accomplishment in itself in sports and athletics, you know. And so I've always wanted to kind of have that conversation and you know, kind of hear it from your point of view. But I was so pumped for you to come out, you know, on top, like you said, you know, all the accolades and the money and everything's great, man. But that had to feel good to put that gold buckle on your belt, you know, and after years of working towards that goal.
Absolutely. It always feels good to accomplish those goals. And here's a story that, you know, most people don't tell, but I've heard it from other world champions, is the feeling isn't actually what you would expect.
Really?
It's not. What really matters, and I can say this even more wholeheartedly now at the end of a career that I don't do it anymore, is the battles you face and the things you overcome in those seasons and those moments. Those are like the real things you cherish. You know, this buckle that's on my belt, I'd be completely honest with you, I can toss it in the trash tomorrow and I'd be okay with that, because those memories of what I overcame and the things that we did that year can never be taken from me, right? And that's my true world championship. But the feeling itself of putting on the buckle is the same as the first one you'll ever win. You know, it's just like, wow, that was a really cool accomplishment. But it doesn't change who you are. You're still the same guy the next morning when you wake up. And quite honestly, you got to find something new to fight for. Because if you don't, you got to have something in front of you every day that you strive to get better at and have a reason for doing it. Or you go backwards. There's no staying where you're at. It's always forward or back.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of bull riders need to find that.
Honestly. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, a lot of guys will get good, and I've been guilty of as well throughout my career, but they'll get to a certain point and think, okay, I've made it. Like, this is what I strove for. I'm good now. I'm a professional. No. Guess what? Like, the minute you think I've made it, you're backsliding.
Yeah.
You've got to keep striving every day.
Yeah.
And the progress you make might be minuscule every day, but you got to keep looking for it.
Yeah. There might not be another sport or career for that matter that'll humble you quicker than
riding bulls. That's right.
I'm sure.
So. You know, I'll tell you. So after I won a world title, I drew chicken on a chain. At the time, he was 12 years old. Won the world title, whatever, a couple times.
One of the coolest bulls of all time.
Yeah, great, big. Yeah, I mean,
scary.
And I remember thinking, I got a 12-year-old bull. I'm going to eat him up. And I'm a world champion. You know how bull riders think. Yeah. There's just nothing can touch him.
Yeah.
And Chicken bucked me off when he was 12 years old, and I'm still embarrassed about it.
Well, he was octane. I mean, the bull side of things, too, is kind of where I was going to here in a second. I just love some of those old bulls like that, you know, that like he was such a staple and to be able to be on him. And before I get into that piece, I got to mention it too, just when you're talking about some of the different experiences and things like that, I got to imagine some of those relationships that you created along that path, you know, are more valuable than any other gold buckle as well, you know, like whether, you know, it's Josh Michelle and you guys having the opportunity to have young families next to each other now, and what you've accomplished, even still with the PBR, you know, on the team side of things. I mean, those are other things that just never go away and will last forever.
Exactly. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Yeah. Like, we're all put here for a reason, right? And if we can make a difference in people's lives, you know, leave this world a better place than we found it, I think that's what really makes this stuff worth doing. And those relationships are what it's all about, you know, especially in the bull riding world. You know, you've experienced it. Like, you see the best and the worst of your buddies. You see triumph, you see defeat, you even see death.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in that extreme of an environment with, you know, with guys that eventually become your brothers, you're in the trenches together. And I tell this to people all the time. There's not another bond out there like that. Like, people on the outside can observe it and think it's really cool, but they will never be able to step into that same bond with those same guys.
And
those relationships, and like you said, like, there's, you get around a campfire full of bull riders and start telling stories, oh my gosh, like, you could write a movie that would make millions, you know?
No doubt about it. There's, because like I said, when you're in that close of proximity with each other and staying together and going up and down the road, I mean, half the time those stories aren't even at the rodeo arena, you know? So, I mean, it's an interesting thing for sure. And it does, it creates blood brothers and a true rodeo family. But, you know, so when you're going back and a good leadway into some of those bulls and some of those great rides that you've had, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just, you know, going off of memory and stuff, but one of the best moments of that finals too, I mean, was Troubadour, mm-hmm. you know, and I just thought that was one of the coolest bulls ever, you know. I mean, just flat bucked, but was just as good as they come. And I mean, that was one of your big rides throughout that finals, I believe. And you know, so when you're looking at some of those bulls and that finals in particular, just in general, are there any particular rides or bulls that really stood out to you as maybe the greatest bull ride you ever made?
As far as the greatest bull ride I ever made, that's a tough one, right? Because they're all special for different, I shouldn't say they're all special. There's special ones for different reasons. Some of them is because of the score. A lot of them are because of the circumstances or what you had to overcome at the moment. Yeah. But
that's why I love asking the question though, right? Because it's not a black and white answer.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the Troubadour bull though is a great story. Just for the fact that kind of where he come from and my connection with that bull. Troubadour was raised by Julio Marino out of California. And Julio and his former wife Cindy had a son that actually ended up developing leukemia, and he named Troubadour when he was a calf. And so, anyhow, as Troubadour was a young bull growing up, we didn't know him, right? But I got to know Michael, through one of the times we went to visit the hospital that he was in and got to meet him. Super cool kid, really, really into bulls. You know, just a great young man. And so I just, that connection between knowing him, and then all of a sudden here comes this great troubadour bull that Michael named. So I ended up being the first guy to ride troubadour in 08, I guess, in Portland. And then in 09, I actually got on him three more times that year.
Yeah.
And rode him every time, the last time being at the finals, the year I win the world. And so it's just a really cool connection to have, like, you know, this kid's fighting for his life.
Oh, for sure.
And for, sure. For him to get the joy from seeing his bull, you know, carry guys to the pay window and be such a great bull. And I think, you know, he won world champion ABBI Classic Bull.
Yeah.
He was in running for Bull of the Year. And you know, Julio, he was really cool too. After I won the world, he gave me a heifer that was sired by Troubadour.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that ended up being a good cow, and she had some bulls that are bucking, or that went on to buck in the PBR after that. So,
man,
you know, and unfortunately, Michael passed away shortly after. And it's life. It's rough, but you know, those memories like that.
Yeah,
you can't beat them.
So those rides and that bull, I mean, that's, you know, again, when you talk about the variable, right, not being black and white, that's a big reason for one of those rides standing out, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, so you're 4 for 4? You got him 4 times?
Yeah, I've got him, rode him 4 times. I think maybe my lowest score was 91, highest was 94 and a half.
Yeah, because he just, I mean, talk about fitting somebody's pattern, too, and your style. I mean, he just fit you, and it was just always such a great bull ride. But when you look at, like, you know, back then, too, is there – any others that stand out to you or whatnot? You know, I know, like I said, it's a tough question to ask, but that, you know, maybe is a special one to you.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll give you a couple. Okay. How about that?
Yeah,
so, perfect. There was a bull I'm trying to think of, 05, 06, named Dr. Proctor. It was in running for Bull of the Year. He's a great big, you know, brown muley out of the Midwest, those Kadich type bulls, big Brangus things that are strong. And he bucked me off. He bucked me off at the finals in 05, my rookie year at the finals. And then I drew him again in 06. Well, I come in 06 and was on fire. Like, rode my first three bulls. I won one of those rounds. And then I can't remember. That year at the finals, I won 3 or 4 rounds. And I can't remember where I was at in that stretch when I drew that bull again. And, at the time, he'd never been rode. And my buddy Josh Cochelle was at the finals with me that year, and he riding as well. And I told him, like, I've been watching that bull. He's bucked me off twice. I said, I think the reason being he's so big shouldered and really strong, and he'd just jerk the rope right out of everybody's hand. He's just so strong. And so I told Josh, I said, I think if you get back off his shoulders a bit, when I'm watching him, there's a pivot point that doesn't move that much. You're not fighting his shoulders. And if I do that and pull my rope pretty loose, I said, I think I'll get along with him. Josh was, whatever. Do you.
Yeah.
And so when I get in the chute that night, I run my rope back a foot further than usual.
Man.
And I told Josh to pull it, and he barely pulled it, and I took it from him and took my wrap. And he's like, are you serious? I'm like, shut up. This is my plan. I'm sticking with it. And golly, that bull rode so good. And, I mean, bucked hard. It was 91 or 92 on him and win the round. And I guess at that moment, that was a ride that really stood out to me, because it was when I started to really trust myself and my, like, judgment on how to ride a bull, whether that be, you know, I need to do this a little bit different or this, whatever. Because a lot of times it's not like, you don't keep doing the same thing over and over and expect to get different results. Like, it's okay to tweak some things in bull riding.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if there's a spot I wanted to be, I wouldn't always just try to be where my rope is. Like, if I'm like, if I naturally want to ride back here, I'm going to bring my rope to that spot and I'll ride him right there. Anyhow, I guess it was a good learning experience, right? To ride the unrideable. And actually, he should have won Bull of the Year that year. That's the year that Mudslinger won it, on a sentimental vote.
Yeah.
That was last year they let bull riders vote, because they're like, all right, see where this is going.
Gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense, man. I remember that Dr. Proctor and just the way that they were built. Like, was he kind of sloped too a little?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was dog face. And,
yeah.
And because that's kind of the lineage that he kind
of
came from.
Yeah. Right? A lot of forward movement, a lot of up and down, got in the air. I mean, really a cool bull, but
a
tough one to get
by. No, that had to be, I don't remember seeing that, but I'm sure that That'd be a good one to
yeah, I think it's on YouTube. You check it out there.
Yeah, a good little feather in your cap. But, you know, and then obviously your career, you know, continued on and you had more good years and have just represented, you know, the sport of bull riding and the PBR specifically, you know, at such a high level for such a long time. And now you find yourself on the other end of the arena in a sense, you know, being the head coach of the New York Mavericks here with the PBR Teams Championships. And you know, I believe, you know, they've had a few years now that this thing just continues to grow. It ain't going anywhere. And these things just getting bigger and bigger. But how has that new experience and chapter in your life been treating you?
The coaching deal is definitely a challenge, right? Everything brings its own challenge. And you would think, you know, I'm like, golly, I've got out of this experience. I know how to win. All right, guys, here's how you do it. And that's not that simple.
Yeah.
You're dealing with, I love it, but you're dealing with guys' brains work maybe totally differently than yours. Yeah. Their style is different than yours. So I've learned, you know, it's not so much about teaching them. It's not about changing their style necessarily. You're trying to bring the best out of them with what the tools they naturally have, right? Improve on their strengths, strengthen their weaknesses. But regardless, I think the team situation is really good because it's given guys a reason to compete for something more than themselves, right? There's that why we do something has got to be bigger than ourselves for you to truly get the most out of your career.
Yeah.
So to be able to be part of that on the selfish side of things, like I love it, right? I love the sport. I love trying to improve. And I 100% believe that it is possible for a bull rider to ride every single bull they get on, mm-hmm. right? And that's my dream, is to see one guy go throughout the entire year and ride everything he got on. I wasn't able to accomplish that in my career. Came close a couple times when I was younger, but that was on lesser quality bulls. Yeah. But I think that's the ultimate, right? Is for a guy to come in and be that dominant.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. Like there's no room for error there.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I think that mindset and getting guys to think like that is huge in this sport, because that's what it's about, right? Is springboarding off of the success and the experience of the guys before you. And that's what, you know, what I was able to do, watching other guys make mistakes and give me advice and do more than they do. So I hope I can be that to this next generation. And on these young guys, it cuts down the learning curve, because there's a learning curve in all of it. And if mm-hmm. we can shorten that, they're going to be more successful and win more and make this sport even better. And
yeah.
I think we're going to see that actually with one of my guys, Hudson Bolton. He's here at the NFR. Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, mark my words, we haven't seen the tip of the iceberg on what that kid's capable of.
Oh, yeah.
It's
coming.
One of those like guys that just makes you sick because they're so freakishly naturally athletic, right? Uh-huh. Like, don't get me wrong, he works hard, but he's so athletic, you just tell him to do what you want him to do and he's probably gonna do it perfect,
man.
And so just the mindset he brings in, work ethic, talent, and the fact that they don't let nothing faze him, you know, he's cool as a cucumber. And so, you know, he's gonna be one to kick everybody's butt here for a long time.
I wouldn't be surprised if we're about to see a big surgeons from him here in the next 6 days as well.
Oh, yeah.
But to your point, I mean, you know, just being a fan and watching him from afar, I mean, I take a look at, you know, the PBR finals in Dallas and Fort Worth, you know, I mean, you could tell it didn't faze him at all, you know, PBR rookie and on the biggest stage in all of bull riding and you know, was handling business there. And then just the other night, you know, round one here at the NFR, you know, I mean, he rode that bull picture perfect. Yeah. And to your point, like, now you talk about him being an athlete or whatnot. I mean, there might not be anybody rides one away from their hand mm-hmm. better. You know, I mean, he is just so technically sound and just makes it look good. But, and then I, you know, while we're on the Hudson Bolton conversation, I mean, you know, you got a great team. You've got a lot of really good bull riders, a lot of really good athletes as well. But it made a drastic impact when Hudson was able to come back, you know, to the season. And boy, you guys had a pretty good finals considering, you know, the seed and everything else. I mean, you know, how about him from that side of things and the impact that he made on your team?
Yeah, well, I guess I would even start to answer that a little bit further back. So I've been involved with the team since the beginning, you know, as an assistant coach for the Freedom for the first 2 years, and a head coach of the Mavericks.
Yeah.
And building a team from scratch as an expansion team, when basically bull riders are a very limited source, right? Like guys that can ride at that level, there's not a ton of them around. So when you're trying to build it up without that source, you know, kind of putting them together it's been a challenge, very challenging. But I think Hudson coming in where he has been. He's honestly, you know, we've got a lot of great guys, but he's an anchor. He's a guy that you can count on day in, day out. And we didn't have him most of the season, right? Because he was rodeoing, and that's something we wanted to let him do. You know, he won Rookie of the Year in the PBR this year. He won second in the PBR finals, second only to Jose Lemmy, three-time world champion now.
Yeah, exactly. On a dominating week.
Yeah, another guy that won every round. So for us not to have him for nearly the whole team season was kind of, you know, a kick in the shorts.
Yeah.
But you saw as soon as he come back, you know, the impact that made on our team. So we're really looking forward to the next few years having him there a whole season.
Yeah.
And it's not just him, you know, it's team. It takes everybody. He could ride every bull he ever gets on, and if our other guys don't do their job, it doesn't matter. So all the guys are growing, are really embracing the mindset of striving every day to be a little bit better, to not accept, you know, standing still. And I think what you saw out of the guys at the end of the season, that's a preview of what's to come. They've started to believe in themselves, believe in the work, and the results have shown for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, on that Thursday, Friday, whatever, you know, that first night, I mean, it wasn't just Hudson that had success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, some of the other guys really stepped up and you guys got through that first round of the bracket, if you will. And you know, so yeah, I think the sky's the limit for what you guys got going on. And when you're talking about bull riders and not being a massive source, if you will, is there anybody coming up? Like, you know, I just absolutely love this in general. I love a good draft, you know, whether it's NFL draft or especially if it's a bull riding draft, I really get into it. But is there anybody that you guys have seen, have your eye on, or, you know, looking forward to possibly making a New York Maverick?
Yeah, there's quite a few guys, honestly, and a lot of them are riding here at the NFR this week. And
yeah,
if you're listening to this, guys, come to the PBR.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of very talented guys rodeoing right now that could make a ton of money, make a big impact in the PBR.
Yeah.
But they got to make the choice to be there, right? And I get it. It's not for everybody. It's not the same as rodeo. But if you want to compete against the best of the best, bulls and guys, that's where you have to go.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And so,
for sure,
you know, we would love to have Stetson, but he's not coming to the PBR with him being a bronc rider.
Yeah.
We'd love to have Wasey. Kind of same scenario there with him being a bareback rider as well. You know,
the next one, though.
Yeah. Kai. Kai, we'd love to have Kai, you know, J.R. Stratford, Tristan Hutchings, T.J. Gray. There's a lot of these guys that we'd love to have. But anyhow, if we're getting out of the rodeo side of things and just looking at up-and-comers, you've got son of former PBR world champion Mike Lee. Noah Lee is a phenomenal rider. And I've got to see him. You know, I was not there when he was born, but I've seen him from the time they brought him out of the hospital. So I've watched this kid grow up, and I guarantee you he's as tough as they come, and he rides really, really good.
He really is. I got a chance to announce a few different events this last year that he was at and didn't see him get bucked off once, you know, and not only did he not get bucked off, but I mean, dominated him, you know, and that's where, you know, I didn't know his exact age and kind of asked for, you know, but yeah, you could tell he has got superstardom written all over him as well, you know, so
he'll be 18 next year.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean he'll be draft eligible then?
Yeah. If he signs up for the draft, he'll be eligible. So
very cool.
Yeah, we would absolutely love to have Noah. You know, there's another good young kid that's kind of from our region in Hayden Welsh. He's the son of another former NFR bull rider, Bobby Welsh.
Yeah.
Super solid. He's really come on strong towards the end of the year. And actually, you probably already know this, but he was on his permit, right?
Yeah.
Didn't buy his card. Wanted to rodeo on his permit for a whole year.
Yeah.
And he won enough money to make the NFR.
What a unique situation.
They need to make a rule change there because there's a very talented kid that qualified for the NFR that is not here because of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, some young guys like that those are the two that stand out, kind of up-and-comers that we'd sure love to have them put on the Maverick jersey and come contribute to the team. But in all honesty, it does get tough when we start doing that, right? Because that's the point of the team is to win, right? And there's not always going to be room for everybody, right? As new up and comers come, they're going to take somebody's spot that's at the lower end. And that's I think should be a driving force to these bull riders, right? Is like to understand that your seat at the table is not guaranteed unless you perform. And that's kind of a, you know, it's kind of can be rough sometimes because we get to be very good friends with these guys. And, you know, we've seen them put their heart on the line for the team. So sure. I don't mind having tough decisions to be made because that means we have a lot of talent, but that is a tough part of the position.
No, definitely. And bull riding, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's, you know, whether you're looking at football or whatever the sport is, you know, bull riding specifically, you know, I mean, things can come and go real quick.
Very quick.
Also to your point, you know, hopefully that also drives the needle to ensure that these guys are doing everything in their ability and that to stay at that highest level and help achieve higher heights from a bull riding perspective, you know? And so I think that's exactly what the team's concept is doing. You know, for sure, you know, especially when you get down to the finals, you know, like being there at the T-Mobile and whatnot, like, you know, it's entertaining to watch the team's championship throughout the season, but at the final specifically, you know, there's so many different opportunities where it's like, you have to make the 8 second whistle, you know, and when you have a sport like bull riding where it is all or nothing right now, I mean, it's the coolest thing in the planet, you know, when a bull rider has to make that 8 second whistle and he could have, you know, he could have Manhater or, you know, some sort of fire breathing dragon under him.
Yeah.
And that's when you see real true, not just athletes, but the mental piece of it to conquer something like that and to, you know, be the Tom Brady or the Kobe Bryant or whatever the case may be, you know? And so I think the team's championship has created those opportunities in a more frequently.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair assumption.
Yeah, it just put kind of every game kind of has that aspect to it where it's like do or die, you know, win or lose type situation. And in my opinion, that's the epitome of bull riding is getting your mind to behave like you want it to, right? Physically, it's easy, right? Yeah. I say easy. You get the crap beat out of you every weekend. But I'm saying the moves you make are easy, right?
Yeah.
I can teach your grandma to do them. But between your ears, that's where it makes or break you.
Yeah.
And the teams have definitely created that opportunity for guys to either, you know, rise or fall to the occasion with those do or die moments.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you know, kind of go back a little bit just because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it. But, you know, yourself, obviously, specifically, but had created such a good path for bull riders from our area. And you mentioned Hayden Welsh and there's a couple other ones, you know, with like the Colton Kaufmans or whatnot and the Brenton Bartletts. And there's some people, you know, that are coming up from that area that I would love to see be a Maverick as well. So hopefully they're listening too. But but ultimately, man, I mean, you've had such an amazing career, you know, through bull riding and now in the team's championship and being the head coach of the Mavericks. And, you know, that's why I got my Mavericks hat on or whatnot.
I'm glad to see that.
Exactly. I mean, I'm always going to support you, but also, you know, when I look at it, I mean, obviously I was going to gravitate towards the Mavericks no matter what. But at the same time, you know, there's no better way for us to grow this sport than to develop a market like New York, right? You know, you mean you might have a lot of people in our, you know, that might say this or that about it, but you take a tiny percentage of that demographic and that geographical location, and you've got a massive amount of bull riding fans. And so, you know, love the opportunity for you to have some of that success and to continue to have the, you know, kind of a home field advantage there in Brooklyn, right? Isn't that where your home game is?
Well, yeah. Well, our first event we had was in Brooklyn, and this past year it was in, forgive me, I can't remember all the little like boroughs and stuff around there, but it was Uniondale. It wasn't far actually from where I won my very first Built for Tough event when I was 19.
Yeah.
But yeah, generally speaking, New York City.
Yeah.
And so, and surprisingly, at our first event in Brooklyn, that was the best fans I've ever heard at a PBR event, period. It was incredible. And I guarantee you half or more of them didn't know what they were even watching, but they had a really, really good time and they'd cheer and boo and just ate it up. And I think, you know, we won that event too. That's the home team, and that'll sell tickets for 15 years.
Yeah,
they just had an outstanding time.
There you go, and that's exactly it. I mean, that's the whole goal in this entire thing. Like you said, finding those bull riders that can ride, you know, every one of them. You know, that's, you know, finding those special athletes. You know, and they might be from the Bronx. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Bobby Del Vecchio, world champion.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So. But so good luck with all that, and you know, just wish you all the best when it comes to the Mavericks. But now here you are, you find yourself, you know, in Las Vegas and on the other end of the rodeo arena, if you will, right, with your girls and rodeo in that way. How's that going for you at home, and what's family life like now?
Yeah, family's great, man. I got, you know, a wife and two beautiful young daughters, 11 and 13. Both of them have rodeo. Currently, my youngest was very good at it, but didn't have a whole lot of desire to do it. So she hasn't been doing it much here lately. My oldest is obsessed. Just every single event she can do, she wants to do. So,
yeah, nice.
You know, we're team roping, we're breakaway roping, we're barrel racing, tying goats, poles, even did the shooting competitions. We're out here this week specifically for breakaway roping, barrel racing, and goat tying. Goat tying's our strongest event. And so roping wasn't very good this week. Barrels was decent. We just missed a short run by one spot. But the goat tying's been pretty well. She placed in the first round at the Vegas Toughest and was second in the second round, and she's winning the average right now in the short round.
Oh, dang, tomorrow. Nice. Short round's tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, man, very good. That's awesome.
So, you know, that's kind of home life right now. Like, I'm, you know, we raise bucking bulls as well. Uh-huh. So I'm doing the bull thing and the coaching thing. And then the kids, you know, my youngest, she's got into swimming. So she's got swimming, and then we're rodeoing. And, you know, anybody with kids understands it's, oh my gosh, it's chaos full time. Yeah. Go, go, go all the time. But, you know, it's good. It always, I think sports and rodeo specifically create such a good environment for young kids to learn about life, right? Like, they're going to experience highs and lows and getting your butt kicked and having to just learn to be tough. And in all honesty, I think that's what our world needs, more tough people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as a society, we've become so conditioned to always seek comfort and ease, and everything we do and build and create is to make our lives easier. We got it wrong, man.
Yeah.
It's the other way around. We need to be seeking out tough things to develop character, not develop comfort. And I think rodeo, there's no better place to do that than rodeo.
Yeah, I think you hit a nail on the head there too. You know, that's a big conversation that, you know, and you're kind of seeing it shine through here. You know, I mean, one, just with the rodeo world in general, had the opportunity to sit down with, like, you know, Cody Webster and some of those guys and what they're doing at the UBF and over there, had a really cool conversation. And I think a lot of that, you know, same piece that you're talking about can be contributed to a lot of just the overall rodeo success as a whole. You know, I mean, the numbers are way up, you know, mm-hmm. That's fantastic to see. But a lot of that comes from hard work and the dedication and determination that you're talking about. But, you know, and then you're still staying in shape. I got to imagine you've been running them dogs.
Yeah. A lot of people know, some people don't, but you know, when you can't do something that you've dedicated your whole life to anymore, in my case, riding bulls, there's can be a feeling of despair, depression, what am I going to do with the rest of my life type situation, because when you've been single track, single minded on this specific thing, and then one day it's taken away, what do you do with that out? You know, where's that outlet for that passion? Yeah. And so for me, you know, I'd been involved hunting specifically with dogs my whole life. You know, we used to raise bird dogs, and then I raised cattle dogs for a long time. and then I got into hounds for hunting, you know, scent hounds. I use them for mountain lions and bobcats.
Yeah.
And I love it. It gave me, and it's not even, you know, some people think of that, oh, you're just out killing stuff. No, not even that. Killing is separate from what these dogs do, right? Like, these dogs are trained to follow a scent that could have been there days ago, and somehow they can smell it and follow it and catch up to wherever that animal currently is.
Uh-huh.
I think that's just one of the coolest things.
It really is. Man.
I see in them what I felt in myself as a passion to desire, or the passion to follow something that you can just barely grasp, but you're going to keep trying to get there. And eventually you get there, right? And that's how I felt about bull riding. Like I told you, I sucked. Like, I wasn't very good for a long time, but I just could smell it just enough to keep going and ended up catching the prize.
Yeah.
During the winter, I try to get out with my dogs. I raise and train them and just get out there and follow them things as much as I can, because not only do I see that same passion in those dogs, but it's also very similar to riding bulls, where it's like, it's very difficult mentally and physically, and you want to quit, and your lungs burn, your body hurts, and you don't really, it's kind of like, you know, you nod your head on a bull, you're like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm ready. Same way when you cut those dogs loose. And
every time you get out on the trail, I can imagine that. And then, like you said, I mean, you got to be pretty tough and gritty to get through that. A lot of people probably don't realize, you know, how quick you're moving up and down those hills, and that elevation gets pretty rank pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, there's been days I'd hiked 12 to 15 miles, you know, off trail in the snow through the mountains just by myself, following those dogs, and hike back to the truck after dark. You know, it's an adventure. And honestly, I think I'd have benefited a lot from doing it more when I was riding bulls, because you hike a couple hundred miles in the winter.
Yeah.
Your hips and legs are so strong. Man, there ain't a bull in this world I feel like could get out from under you.
Yeah.
But the only way to do it is to get in the mountains and hike.
Yeah. It's not something you can get done just in the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Cody, thank you so much for stopping by, man, and having a conversation. You know, like I said, there's a lot of that I'd been wanting to ask you about for a long time, you know. And again, so thankful for what you've done for our area when it comes to the sport of bull riding, and then just bull riding as a whole, and representing it at such a high level, man. And so thank you so much for coming by, and wishing tell me again what your daughter that's up tomorrow, what's her name?
Sheridan,
that's right. I didn't know which one it was. And so wish her the best of luck tomorrow in the short round, and that's awfully cool, man. So congratulations on that too.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Cody. But well, folks, that is going to do it for another episode here of The Woodshed with Cody Wood on Equus Radio Network. But what a great opportunity to sit down, like I said, with one of the great bull riders of all time, and then one of the great champions. And so sure to appreciate Cody being here. But right now, we're getting ready. Make sure to tune in tonight for round number 5, Hudson Bolton, hopefully coming out of here with a win tonight, you know, and then your New York Maverick can have some success. But and then thank you once again to Buildings by Design and Pat Walter for supporting this episode here with The Woodshed with Cody Wood. But for right now, folks, we will see you tomorrow morning. I got another great guest, really close relative in a rodeo family sense here to Cody tomorrow morning. So it should be another great interview and fun time in the morning as well. So y'all have a good night and have a good rest of your day in round number 5 here at the Wrangler National Final Rodeo.
If you enjoyed the podcast, let us know. Contact Cody Wood at cody@equistelevision.net. Thanks for listening, and join us every week right here on the Equus Radio Network.